Srila Prabhupada begins by dismissing a class of aspiring spiritualists whose goal is to merge into God. The infant being, pure monist, Srila Prabhupada terms them, and less charitably, self-destroyers and seekers of spiritual suicide. They are a breed by themselves, who deem individuality worthless. Right? They're in their own category because they just don't believe in relationships. So this is like taking, you know, skepticism or cynicism to its fullest extent. Right? Someone who has had bad relationships and therefore doesn't want to interact with others, now they're taking it to the extent where they don't even want to, relate to themselves as individuals. His divine grace turns to transcendentalists he calls dualists or personalists. They manifest their eternal transcendental nature without losing their individual identity as spirit souls. In the state of pure identity, they engage in the eternal service of the Supreme Lord and as a result relish, quote, the immortal nectar of divine bliss. So here, pure identity, in the state of pure identity. So the idea is the monists are trying to get to the platform of purity, free from material entanglement. But they don't understand that's by establishing the true identity still as a person. They think that if spirit material is a person, then spiritual means not a person. So then that difficulty comes up. So we see here then Prabhupada is pointing out that it's in a pure identity. Then that state, the immortal nectar of divine bliss, right, which is beyond Brahmananda. It must be noted that Srila Prabhupada leaves no doubt that the path of perfect knowledge of the self as Jnana Yoga is followed by the personalists, not by the so-called monists. The doctrinal basis of the Jnana path is an ancient text named Vedanta Sutra. As the philosophical essence of the Vedas, even the monists respect it as authoritative. Indeed, Sri Krishna himself accepts the authority of Vedanta. Moreover, the opinion of his incarnation in his age, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is that Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So we see here Vedanta Sutra is established very nicely. It's not thrown out. So even the monists accept it as the essence of all the Vedic literatures. And then Lord Chaitanya is accepting it. But he's saying that the natural commentary on that is Bhagavatam. So it's giving the same knowledge. So the Vedanta, then Bhagavatam is Vedanta. So in this thing is the Jnana Yoga. So Vedanta, that's Jnana Yoga, right? It's not, the path of Jnana means you're trying to understand this knowledge, but from the monist point of view. And therefore, you're not actually getting the complete picture. You don't really understand what Vedanta is all about, because Vedanta is about sambandhavideya prayojana. So if that's transcendental, means it always exists. So then if we have the element, then where we're going to stop existing, that means all these other things then aren't in play. So sambandha abhideya and prayojana stop to exist. So therefore, they can't actually be true Vedantists. They're not really understanding the nature of Vedanta. Right? And Krishna himself accepts it because he says, of the 14 books, I am Vedanta. Right? You have 14 books of Vedic knowledge, Krishna says, I am Vedanta. So that then becomes, we establish that is the paravidya, the Vedanta, that is the transcendental knowledge, is the important knowledge. So practicing that knowledge, that's Jnana Yoga. Right? Because it uses the intelligence doesn't mean that it's not devotional. Because we have to understand, how is your hand devotional? Right? How is your hand made out of the gross material elements? Gross material elements. The gross material elements, how is that devotional? Right? But you can use it to wash a pot or to offer an artik. Then it becomes engaged in the Lord's service. So the same way jnana or knowledge then is used in the Lord's service. So what's being engaged is your intelligence. The Vedanta is already spiritual. So to say, oh, we're not jnanis, we don't care for that, that's Maya, then they're missing the point. So even the impersonalists know better than this. What am I saying? You have to go into lower stages. You have to go into Karma Mimamsa or somewhere else to dismiss this. So you'd have to drop right down into really bogus philosophies to not accept the authority of Jnana Yoga. Because right? It's based on the Vedanta, which means it's based on Bhagavata. Jnana Yoga begins with research into the subject of Kshetra and Kshetra-gya. The first, Kshetra, is the field of 24 material ingredients, which combine to form the gross material body. Natural transformations of that field cloud the knowing potency of the soul. Right? It means the chit potency of the soul. It's clouded by these transformations. Because the soul identifies with these transformations, therefore it thinks it's being transformed along with them. Right? So as the body changes, one, you know, thinks one's young, one's old, or one dies, or one's born, right? Or one becomes rich, or one becomes poor, or the next life that one is something else, another form, another transformation. So in that way, the soul's, the knowledge, the natural knowledge of the soul becomes covered. Natural transformations of the field cloud the knowing potency of the soul, who has somehow or other come to be situated in the field. This cloud of maya, illusion, casts a shadow of consciousness in the form of mind. Within the mind appear material desires, hate, enjoyment, lamentation, and so on. This mental consciousness is no less than the living entity's material existence. The fact remains, however, that even as he clings to illusion, determined to be the kshetra instead of its knower, the living entity remains always what he is, pure spirit soul. By proper application of Jnana Yoga as directed by Vedanta, even such a confused soul may recover the correct perception of himself as Kshetra Gya. As such, he is serenely transcendental to the actions and reactions of matter. So here, Kshetra, Kshetra Gya, why this is important? And it seems so simple, it's only two things, right? If it's going to be knowledge, it has to be very complex. No, it's just two things. The field and the knower of the field. The problem is the living entity in illusion, covered by illusion, then these transformations of the field, the living entity identifies with them and thinks they are the field. That's the problem. You think you're the body. You think you're, I'm this, I'm that, I'm whatever it is. So one has to become the knower of the field. So therefore to say, we're not this body, Prabhu, and then completely identify with the field, that's not Kshetra Gya. Does that make sense? You know, oh, we don't care for all these rules, and then identify with the field, you know, get in your car and drive home to the family. You know what I'm saying? That's still Kshetra, the field of activities. So only when one Kshetra Gya, one understands who one is as the soul, then one can deal with Kshetra properly. So that's the whole point that we're trying to establish by the study of Shastra, is how to understand who we are, right, who God is in that relationship. Therefore, we engage the Kshetra in the Lord's service. That's what we're trying to do. So therefore, how many aspects of the Kshetra cover our intelligence? That's what we have to address. Oh, we don't get into all these details. Yes, but in your life you do. So that means we don't get into it in the form of knowledge that I may free myself from attachment and identification to the Kshetra. But I will nicely engage in all these things in ignorance and say, I'm just being real, Prabhu. I'm just being practical. This is natural. Does that make sense? So this is the point where the Vedanta is important. Therefore, then Prabhupada calls it. What is that point? Devotion resides in perfect knowledge of the Supreme. In other words, devotion resides in our understanding from the perspective of Vedanta that we are the Kshetra Gya. Right? Krishna is the Supreme Kshetra Gya, and the material energy is the Kshetra. Understanding that, then our devotion can function in that. Because until you know, I am Krishna's servant, which means I'm the Kshetra Gya, not the Kshetra. How can I serve Krishna? So in other words, those areas where you think I'm not the body, I'm servant of Krishna, like let's say in deity worship, right, or chanting the holy name, therefore you get so much success from it. It's progressive. Why? Because you are acting as the Kshetra Gya. Right? But when one goes home and interacts in the family environment or in the economic environment or social environment, as much as one identifies as the Kshetra, one is not making any spiritual advancement. There is no spiritual advancement. But if one understands he's a Kshetra Gya, then he can use that same Kshetra that is covering his intelligence to free him from that. Does that make sense? Good. Right? This is nice, very nice, clear way to identify the importance of understanding these elements of Jnana Yoga. How to see Krishna in everything. It means that Krishna says you must see him in everything, both indirectly, directly and indirectly, at all times, all places, all circumstances. So this is, you can only do that if you're Kshetra Gya. If you think you're Kshetra, how do you see yourself, right? You can't see yourself, right? So the point is you can see something else. So as soon as you see I'm not this Kshetra, then you can see it. As long as you identify that I am the Kshetra, you can't actually see the Kshetra for what it is. You may see other elements of the Kshetra, but you can never actually understand your identity. Therefore, you can't act spiritually. So that's the point. If you don't see yourself a Kshetra Gya, you cannot act spiritually in a mundane environment. Right? So the Vedanta is teaching how in that, what we would call a mundane environment, by being the observer of the field and knowing who you are in that relation to that field, and Krishna and his relationship with that field, then that field no longer becomes an obstacle for your advancement. It becomes the medium or means by which you can elevate yourself. Right? It becomes the residence of your devotional activities. Right? So simply that stubborn arrogance that I want to identify with this field and no one should point it out and make me feel bad. Right? That's a problem. Right? Of course, the methods that's been used, what have we used? We've used these methods of hate, enjoyment, lamentation, and all that, right? They come from the Abhideya aspect. It means you have those things because you identify with the field. You taste them when you interact. Remember, Abhideya then generates emotions. Right? The emotions that are felt in the performance of activity. So all these will be generated there. So applying that therefore, you know, the grihasthas, you know, the attached, you know, dirty, stinky, smelly, you know, whatever other, you know, how you say?
Kachi grihasthas.
Yes, all these different things that they want to use as, how you say? Upa. Yeah, just not derogatives. I mean, it's used in a derogative way, but they're embellishments on, you know, the noun of grihastha, right? So that kind of a thing has been used, so therefore it's not very attractive. But here we're talking about, technically they're using passion on passion. Because there's a desire for it, therefore someone else with a repulsion to it, then makes a person with desire for it feel bad. With the idea is that by them feeling bad, I'll feel better. Right? I'm repulsed, so therefore if I can, you know, make other people that way, I'll feel better. Right? But here is we're working with goodness. That goodness is knowledge, that learning you're the Kshetra Gya. So the point is okay, you're in the family situation, you're in the worldly situation, fine. But why think you are that world? You know, the famous, we are the world, you know, like this. What does that mean? No. It's a matter of you are the knower of the world. So in that state, then you can deal properly. But if you're going to deal that, you're on the platform of knowledge. So if you're Kshetrajna and Krishna is the supreme Kshetrajna, so the medium you have to interact with him is the Kshetra, then you would use the Kshetra according to Krishna's directions. Simple. Right? It's not rocket science. Right? So this Jnana Yoga is not rocket science. It's very straightforward. Due to our attachment to Gyan, we make it complex and make it into rocket science. Right? But it's not. It's very straightforward. Kshetra, Kshetra, Gya. There's the field and there's you. Right? That's it. When you think you're the field, there's a problem. You're an illusion. When you understand you're not the field, you're the knower of the field, then you're free from illusion. You got a question?
Maharaj, does this kshetra mean only the body or, as you said, the social and economic environment?
It means everything connected with the body. Right? Because otherwise, what's the meaning to you of social life that's going on, let's say, in, you know, Namibia right now? Right? There's a little boy down at, you know, the local river going to, you know, fetch water in his clay pot for his mother, and that, and another kid's there, and for the meantime they spend a few minutes picking up rocks and throwing them into the river to make splashes or skip them or throw them at frogs or monkeys or whatever else happens to be out there, crocodiles, you know, hippopotamuses, maybe a platypus or two or something, you know? Right? So what has that got to do with you? Nothing. So there's no illusion in your mind about that because you're not involved in it. So therefore the field means the body and everything generated from it. Because you have this body, right? The soul comes into this body at the time of conception. Therefore that body then gives you a certain parents, therefore a particular community, particular condition, nature, right? Particular social status, a particular world view. Right? Everything comes from that. So that's where it starts. Then you engage the body. That's how you progress or regress or like this. Does that make sense? Yeah. So everything is all about... So that's why we say we're not this body, you know? That's why we don't have to... We use as an example, we think it's humorous. You're not this car. Right? If we say, oh, you're not this car, we think that's funny. But if we say you're not this body, then oh, that's very deep, you know, sort of like that's something to think about. It's just as funny. You know what I'm saying? But we don't push that point because then the people get upset. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea. So if that's understood, if you understand that point, you understand everything else. Therefore, earth, water, fire, air, ether that the body's made out of, that's the gross body, the form of it. Right? Then you have the knowledge acquiring senses. You have the working senses, right? This all makes the body work. Then they have the sense objects, whatever it is that you're interacting in. That will create everything else, right? That's controlled by the mind, right? With, you know, how you say, influencing the intelligence. And all that is there because of the false ego. You falsely identify with it. So you change the false ego to real ego, then where's the material existence? That's the whole point of the Brahman understanding. It's not that when you become Brahman realized, poof, you just disappear and go somewhere else. Right? The point is it's Brahman, it's inferior Brahman, but because you identify with it because of false ego, therefore all the other elements, all the other 24 elements, therefore function in that way. But as soon as the ego is corrected and we come to proper consciousness, then all these other ingredients are just elements that you use in your service to the Lord. Right? Expressing your affection, your devotion to the Lord through engaging these other elements. Because what does it matter for the soul, whether he's situated in the spiritual world or the material world? If he understands his relationship with the Lord, acts according to that relationship, then that's perfection. Right? So it doesn't really matter. That's why the great personalities can come here and render their service. It's just inferior, right? It doesn't have the facilities. Does that make sense? You know, like an inferior, utensil. It doesn't work as good. You know? So Therefore, it's not as nice. But it still can be done. You can cook in a solid gold pot. You can cook in a cast iron pot. Cooking can be done. It's just easier if you're using gold and silver pots than it is to work in these others. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't matter. The point is the offering still will be made. The same devotion is applied. So that's what's being done, is that you can come to the transcendental platform simply by understanding I am the Kshetrajna. Doing that, so the Vedanta Sutra therefore is explaining the difference between the Kshetra and Kshetrajna, and how many ways you can make a mistake of thinking you're the Kshetra, and how many ways you can understand that you're the Kshetrajna. So that's Vedanta. That's Jnana Yoga. So when it acts on that platform, it's not. Karma Yoga means you're acting according to the rule and doing it for Krishna. So if you're not following a rule, you walk out of the temple door and you follow your own rules, there's no karma yoga there. There's no devotion. You are a devotee, but at this time you're not acting like it. Like Indra is a devotee, but when he's raining down, Santasamvartaka clouds to inundate Vrindavan, you can't call that devotional activity. You know what I'm saying? He's doing the activities of Indra. He's, applying rain, he's chastising those he feels is wrong. So therefore he's being real, he's being practical. You understand? But it's not devotional. So in the same way as the devotee, in those activities that aren't the direct devotional activities that he identifies as his sadhana and his devotional service, all those indirect things are not devotional service. They're just mundane. And just saying, I'm being practical, or everyone's got to do it, or everyone's got to make money, these don't rationalize it and make it spiritual and make it go away. Especially when we're claiming, we're so intelligent, we're rational, we're logical, we don't just blindly accept the Shastra. Yes, we don't blindly accept the Shastra. Why? Because we are so impure due to our previous samskaras, we can't. It's not that we can't. This is like the man who smokes telling the devotee who doesn't smoke, I'm free to smoke, I can do whatever I want. Actually, it's just the opposite. The devotee could be smoking, but he decides he doesn't want to smoke. While the karma, he has to smoke. You say, okay, if you're free to smoke or not smoke, let's say you stop smoking for 3 months. And then after that, you can go ahead and smoke. They cannot do it. So the person who says, we don't care for these rules, you can understand this has come out of the mouth of someone who cannot follow the rules. Otherwise, why would you say that? You would only use it if someone is taking a rule and misapplying it and making the rule more important than the devotional activity. Therefore, we say don't like that. But if you're doing something that says, that you dropped that on the floor, you should clean it. We're not fanatic, Prabhu. That's said by a person who can't do it. It makes them angry that they have to follow rules, that they have to be controlled. That's the bottom line. We're dealing with non-devotional mentality. So that's one of the points of the 24 elements, polluted consciousness. So if we can't recognize it as one of the 24 elements, and then just say, everybody's got it, like belly buttons or something, and therefore, it's fine. So then, why even take up Krishna consciousness? Right? Is it just that we want to get rid of the pain? That's all? We're satisfied to remain as neophyte devotees? I had economic problems, or I had, social problems, or I just was looking for knowledge. It bothered me. Where did I come from? And by performing devotional activities, actually I'm performing religious activities, because religion removes these things. Right? I do nice things, I do sadhana, therefore then I get a good result. That good result is no more money problems, no more anxieties, I have knowledge. And that's it. Are we satisfied to leave it at that? Or do we want to take it to the point where we want to know Krishna and our relationship with Krishna, how to act in that? And then go beyond that to want to please Krishna. That then becomes the question. Is that what we want? If that's what we want, then we have to know that these other things, they come up. We will get overwhelmed, where that's what we've been doing. We've been thinking we're the kshetra for a long time, right? Since time immemorial. So now, to go beyond that, then that is something new for us. So it's understood that one will make the mistake, but to say that mistake is all right, or try to even ratify it that it's good, that's nothing short of stupidity. Right? It's just, that's it. That's all it is. It's complete foolishness. Why would you want to ratify? We're saying we're not this body, but at the same time, it's all right to think you're this body. You know, so if you have knowledge and don't act on it, then it hasn't connected. It's not jnana yoga. Yoga means you connect to the Supreme. So this, not through this knowledge, you connect to the Supreme. They're not connecting to the Supreme. What's the use of it? This doesn't mean that someone's not attached, but he knows he's attached, and he's using this process to try to connect that. He's attached to the field of his family. So therefore, he's trying to, as a kshetra gya, see how to engage properly the family in Krishna's service, because those attachments he has, so he wants to see it from that perspective. That's intelligent. No one's saying, oh, well, therefore you give it all up, go to the forest. No, this is the process. This is what's not understood. Why won't we accept this as the process? Why can't we accept that the parents' interaction with their kids, husband and wife interacting with each other, all these things cannot be made Krishna conscious? Where would that come from? Where would that concept come from? Because that's not what the Vedas say.
Mayavadis?
Yes, from the Mayavadis. Exactly. Therefore, nirvisesh shunyavadi paschatyadesh atari. Paschatyadesh, Western countries, they're so fixed in this impersonalism that even you say you can still perform the activities in relationship with your family with the same external seeming attachments and be using it to elevate yourself. And most of us say no. I can say whatever I want here because everybody's come for a long time and it's our place, so we set the price on the milk, right? But if I go outside of here, specifically to a Western country, you know, anything other than a Western country, I can say these things also. If I go to a Western country, guaranteed in every lecture, someone's going to bring up, this is Maya. Why would we deal with it? Right? As they're sitting there, you know, in their nice clothes, or they're this, or they're that, and they're fancy, and they're telling me, this is Maya. I'm telling them how to engage all that Maya that they're in Krishna's service, and they'll say, that's Maya. Right? So that's the whole idea, is that even the medicine they don't want to take, they want to be in Maya. And they want to ratify it and say it's great, and because we're Westerners, therefore we're on top of the pile of the world, therefore whatever we do is great, therefore if anybody else does something more devotional, that's wrong, because we can never be less than perfect. So if we can't do it, nobody else better be doing, because we're not going to allow anyone else to do something better than us. Right? Therefore, bring it all down to the lowest common denominator. And they think they've done some great, benefit for the devotional movement of Lord Chaitanya. Make any sense? So the whole idea is, Prabhupada's trying to give is, what does he say? You don't have to change position. You just say where you are. But that doesn't mean you don't change your consciousness. Know the kshetra gya. So that thing, oh, Prabhupada says you don't have to change position. But he's saying you change your consciousness. But that's the point. Is it's either change your consciousness, you don't do anything that you did before, so all relationships, all family, all sentiment, all emotions, everything out the window, or it's all in the window and anything else is out because Krishna Prabhupada says you don't change your position. It's always this extremity. But the point in the middle, that you don't have to change the position, you just change completely how you view it, that is not an option. It's just cannot be accepted, cannot be digested. The whole Bhagavad Gita is saying that. Arjuna is on the battlefield. Then Krishna says he's a fool for not understanding transcendental knowledge. So Arjuna says, great, I'm leaving the battlefield. Krishna says, no, you're not. So after speaking the whole Bhagavad Gita, he's still on the battlefield. He's still a grihastha. He's still married to Draupadi and Subhadra. Right? He's still got his Gandiva bow. He's still shooting it and killing people. So what changed? Nothing except his consciousness. So that's the whole point. If someone is a grihastha, what changes? The consciousness. This whole idea, I'm more Krishna conscious because I ignore my wife and kids and I don't take care. That's advancement. That's not advancement. That's just called repulsion or laziness, actually. It's a lot of trouble to take care of. So therefore, by not taking care, he uses Krishna consciousness an excuse for his actual laziness and lack of knowledge that he knows what he's doing. He actually is unqualified to be a grihastha. But he's not going to admit that, so therefore he uses this clever tool of cloaking it in Krishna consciousness, and therefore it makes it look spiritual. I've actually had devotees tell me, husbands tell me, there's nowhere the Prabhupada says that a husband's got to take care of the emotional needs of the wife. And therefore, he'll do nothing with his wife that has any scent of emotion. And he thinks he's doing great. So this is the pollution of the impersonalism. This is the lack of qualification. Absolute, total lack of qualification. This person doesn't even qualify as a brahmachari, let alone as a grihastha. Because even a brahmachari has to consider others. Sacrifice means to consider others. And others means their physical, their emotional, and intellectual platform. Right? On the conditioned state. Of course, spiritual is there. So he is a grihastha. How does that come into the equation? If that comes into the equation, why wouldn't the woman's emotional needs come into the equation? Understand? Why are we saying all this? We're saying all this because this whole point of kshetra-kshetra-gya is completely ignored. We only use it for political purposes. You're not this body. You say you're not this body to get someone out on Sankirtan. You say you're not this body so the women can do whatever nonsense they want to do and no one should bother them. But everybody acts according to their body, right? This is the problem. This is a big problem. It's simply this two things. You understand this division, then you're solidly situated on the path to remove one's ignorance due to identifying with the material energy. You don't accept these two, and that they go into everything in your life, then it's a problem. That you're a temple president, that kshetra. The soul's not the temple president. Right? The conditioned nature is the temple president. The soul identifies with it, therefore, in that way you say, the soul is the temple president. Right? You know? But the temple's made out of what? Right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So what's spiritual about that? It's because it's engaged in Krishna's service. You see it as the temple. Therefore, then the position of temple president also has to be seen from the same vantage point. Right? So it can be, that may be a conditioned nature to manage. That's good. That's how you engage it. There's no other way. You know? But if you don't see it properly, then it's just management. If you don't see it connected, you got something done. There's some prestige there. Those things also have to be removed. Right? Just as much as a grihastha with his family. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is whatever your situation, whether it's in the temple, out of the temple, if you are still identifying with the field, you still have that much problem. The advantage of being in the temple is there's more likely a chance you're going to be engaged more in direct activities that you do see yourself separate from, that you do see yourself as the kshetragya. And so you'll be making more benefit than those who are outside who are engaged less in that. But as far as consciousness of actually being able to deal with the material energy and see the difference between kshetra and kshetragya, they're both on the same platform. That's why when that temple devotee gets married, he's in the same situation as the other grihasthas that are there and don't know. Because his own personal realization of kshetra, kshetragya is not very much. The Prabhupada's, perfect wisdom in how to create a temple program and temple life to keep everyone engaged 24/7. That's his credit, not the temple devotee's credit. If it was their credit, then why is it when they move out of the temple, then we don't see their houses exactly the same level as the temple? Because it was Prabhupada's program that was making them advance. Then if they apply their own realization on that, then you have something really dynamic. The program's dynamic, the person taking part of it's dynamic, that's really, you know, it's like you're walking on an escalator. It's really fast. Yeah. Does that make sense? But we're standing on the escalator. So we're moving, but we're not doing anything really, other than just agreeing to take part in the process. But it's that perfection of that process that Prabhupada's given that is so perfect. Does this make sense? You had a question?
Yeah. You sort of pretty much covered it in the second bit. The kshetraja is just our constitutional position. Everything other than our real ego is servant of Krishna. Everything else is kshetra. Even like I am everything.
Everything else is.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be physically manifest,
everything. No. That's why Varnashram is considered external. Because it's dealing with the kshetra. But now you've taken the kshetra, instead of it allowing it to just be arbitrary, you've scientifically arranged it into something progressive. Since you're going to have to deal with the kshetra anyway, it's not going away, right? Therefore, you arrange it according to Varnashram. Then everything has its place, everything has its relationship, you know its natural position, and it all works very, very nicely. Then it works very good. You don't do that, then how are you going to engage this? If you really understand that I am not this body, I am the soul, I am servant of Krishna. Now I have this kshetra in front of me, how to engage in Krishna's service. Now the idea is that I can engage it according to my own idea, or I can engage it according to Krishna's idea. Right? Because the idea of engaging the kshetra in Krishna's service is to please him. So wouldn't it be better to use the kshetra a way Krishna would like the kshetra to be used? So that's shastra. The Shastra gives how to use that kshetra in Krishna's service. Shastra tells you how you're not the kshetra. What is the kshetra and what is the kshetragya? Then it goes on to explain, therefore, how to engage the kshetra properly in the service of the supreme kshetragya. Because the natural position of the kshetra is servant of the soul, as kshetragya is serving the supreme kshetragya. So it's very, very simple and straightforward. Like that. So all these things are there. It's a matter of understanding how to properly apply it. Okay.
You mentioned that all aspects of kshetra should be addressed.
It means all aspects that are in your life. Does not come, why wouldn't it come? It's a matter of consciousness, that's all. Karma, well, what do you mean by engage?
Engage, like, for example, somebody might have a desire to do some managerial activities or controlling others, but still it's not coming, or somebody
But the thing is it's like this. Maybe that doesn't come, but that other parts of your life is still there. Because what is there in your life, that's what you engage. The other thing is maybe the managerial things don't come into life because you don't see yourself as kshetriya, therefore you don't actually engage the others according to Krishna's direction. You engage it according to your own needs, your own perspective. Therefore, it's not actually management. It's just control issues. Right? Because the control has to be used for benefit. Like the parents control the child. For what purpose? For the child's benefit. Those parents that control the children exclusively for their own benefit, those are called bad parents. Right? Legally, they're parents, but in actuality, in rasa, they're not. Does that make sense? So same way as one could be a manager, but if one's only controlling because one likes to control, that's not actually a manager. A manager means one who controls others for others' benefit. Right? Your means, in other words, you control yourself to engage yourself in Krishna's service. Management means you help others by controlling them so that they see that they're engaging themselves or managing themselves to engage in Krishna's service. So you're trying to teach them how to manage their own lives. That's a manager. Manager is one who can produce managers. So he teaches you how to manage your own life. So those with that ability to manage then will come up and be managers. Those that don't have will be very competent in being managed. Because you can only manage people who are manageable. So a real manager can create manageable people and managers. And if that's not happening, it may be one wants to control, but that's not one's field. Right? Does that make sense? So we'll end here. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
I would probably recommend, since today's Govardhan Puja, that the program, you never quite know how it'll go, or prasad, or different things like that, to avoid any, you know, strain on that. Probably we don't run the afternoon class, you know, because who knows when prasad finishes and this and that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So then, but we'll have the morning class tomorrow, same place, same time. Hopefully, similar circumstances. Good job. So, who are you?
I think I'm Kshetra, but I'm Kshetra.
Aha, I see. So what are you doing about this? What plan do you have to become Kshetra? How are you planning to connect your life?
Just everything you do, just see it in a longer goal.
And how? What are you going to base that on? How are you going to see it in connection to Krishna?
Do it for him. As devotees.
Okay. But how do you know you're doing it for him, not for yourself?
No, you just think you're doing it for him.
Okay.
To enable one to see things according to Kshetra and Kshetra,
yeah? Yeah, because you can distinguish, otherwise you have a tendency to not notice.
So that will also be then applied to the mind, interaction with the mind.
Yeah, because otherwise the mind will create these illusions.
Okay.
So that's all.